In my house, we are in the present stage of imaginary adventures. And it goes from cowboys on their horses rescuing people to dressing up as Buzz Lightyear, the spaceman, and going to space, to going outside and building things, and asking if a fire can be built, so we can do that as well. And the adventure imagination phase has been tremendously interesting for me to watch. I'm sure many of you with kids and have been parents know this as well. The idea of an adventure story is gripping for a child, particularly boys, I suppose, to kind of immerse yourself into the exciting adventure of what could be. That there's no fun sitting still on the couch. There's a world to be explored. It's an adventure to be had. And playing the part, dressing up to play the part, is all part of the experience of trying it on for size, to see what lies ahead. And it's been fun to watch. Kind of wakes this dad up in the midst of the ordinariness of life and can see how adventure can enlarge the soul and the mind. And I've been thinking about this as we've gone throughout the book of Exodus the past 4 months, which is a story that describes an adventure. The adventure of the people of God, in which the beginning of their journey was not something that they could have imagined or desired or even had the ability to begin. They were caught in their own slavery. And Moses as well was living his life on his own terms, a very comfortable life as a shepherd. And what he was asked to do was something that he resisted. To step out. To go and to do something that he was not thinking was possible, and to engage in something he thought would fail. And we've seen the ups and downs of the journey throughout the book of Exodus, from the amazing way in which, even as the Lord was doing miraculous things in Egypt, the people were beginning to question whether or not this was the right course of action, very discouraged with Moses. Then the amazing parting of the Red Sea, as which they are saved from their enemies and they get out into the wilderness and the complaining begins. We wish we could go back. We wish we had food. We wish we had the things that were available to us in the midst of our own slavery. And time again, the Lord moves them. And the sum total of this passage, when you get to the end of the book of Exodus, and just describing what it is their life would look like for the next 40 years. For many people, this is the only life they would have known. It is precisely this reality. It is a journey. It is an adventure in which they're being led by God. And there's only three things to be said about this, is that when the Lord moved, they're supposed to move. When the Lord sits still, they're meant to wait and sit still also. But remembering, thirdly, that whether they're moving or whether they're presently waiting, the Lord is with them. He's with them all the way. And it's the one thing that makes waiting and moving worthwhile. It's the one thing that makes waiting and moving make sense, because the Lord is with you, guiding you, leading you. Now, I find it interesting that if you want to talk about the history of the American experience is kind of primarily defined by the story of an adventure. What does it mean to have the American experience? Well, it started with people wanting religious freedom, getting onto boats, risking their lives to come into a new world. It's the New World Adventure. Very interesting book called Failure of Nerve, written by a Jewish sociologist that describes the difference between a New World attitude and an Old World attitude. I'm forgetting Edwin, forgetting the last name, but he describes this reality that the American experience used to be that of an adventure. And it began to morph and to go into different kinds of forms. What was it? It was the adventure into new territories. You got Thomas and Jefferson going and exploring the unknown West, right? And then the Old West Trail and the Appalachian Trail and the adventure of going out and finding lands and setting up shop and trying your new hand at a new business, a new place to go, the covered wagon, the horses. The American experience was that of an adventure, a life to be lived. And for some reason, it's morphed into now something quite different. What is the American experience? It's primarily defined by, and again, sociologists kind of pejoratively mock this, saying it's the desire to have the perfect house, the perfect spouse, the white picket fence, the 2.5 children, and various economic means. What's the difference between the two? One was a life to be lived, one was an adventure, now what is it? It's a status. It's something you can say, I have this, it's mine, I can hold on to it. So rather than something of tackling the trail of a mountain to go see a new vista, it's actually, instead of putting a tent down, putting rocks down and saying, this is just what I want, a particular status. And this seeps into the Christian life as well. We can talk about the American experience all we want, but it's more important to talk about what it means for a Christian to live their lives. And the Christian life is described in Scripture as a journey. It's not reducible to simply what I know or what I'm comfortable with or the history that I have. And we do that both collectively in terms of individual experiences as well as collective bodies of faith. Churches throughout the world are closing their doors because their ministries are uniquely suited for ministry 50 years ago. And that goes the same for old school churches or modern megachurches. They have set up a status to protect. And in the midst of our own Christian lives and the growth therein, the temptation is always as well to protect it, to protect what we know, protect what we're used to, protect what we're comfortable with. I've read the Bible a few times. Is there anything else for me to really learn? Well, there's some problems with this. We have to understand the Christian life is that of a journey, because whether or not, even in the midst of protecting what we know, we get moved at times through surprising circumstances to begin to set out again. And the Lord wants us to move. He wants us to press forward. And what did we learn in Exodus about the problems of not listening to the guidance of the Lord? If the first thing that we learn in Exodus 40 is that when the Lord moved, they need to move. What's the problem? Well, the problem that arises is their refusal to move in the midst of their own comfort level. Here we have meat. Or the great one where they've been called to wait while Moses goes up into the mountain to get the Ten Commandments. What happens in the midst of their waiting when they are refusing to listen to him? Idolatries come about. Begin worshiping other things. It's the danger of standing still. Rather than taking the blessings of what the Lord has given us, rather than seeing what his hand has provided, we begin to attach ourselves to them and say, this is mine. And it becomes idolatrous. I want this. I want that. But the Lord knows we never grow, we never mature, unless we move out. I don't mean that literally, though at times for families, moves are necessary. A new job, taking care of family. But I mean moving in terms of faith. Not holding on to what we've always known, been comfortable with, but a new ministry opportunity, a new way of growing, a new way even in the midst of the work in which we're involved day in and day out, which is our professions of learning new things and growing in our relationships with others. The Lord wants His people to move because it's in moving that they learn. It's in moving, actually, that they knew what it meant to be hungry. They knew what it meant to be thirsty. They knew what it meant to trust Him because they couldn't provide it for themselves. The very fact of going on a journey requires that you place your trust into someone, the guide, who's going to lead you through it. It's the only way that we hold on to faith in the midst of those kinds of difficulties. Now, of course, the opposite is also true. If when the Lord didn't move, they were not to move. And in the Exodus, when people decided to leave the community in which they were involved and went off on their own, there were great tragedies to be felt in that. It was the disruption of families. There was the lack of protection in the midst of following the Lord. And this is a problem, too. That if our personality is such that we think that, as Andy talked about last week, we can't be content with anything, that we need the new house, we need the new spouse, we need the new career, we need the new opportunity to be happy, and we jump from thing to thing, and knowing that when we do that, we can't develop good quality relationships. We miss time with our kids. It has a lot of negative effects when it becomes something of a desire for us to move without being led. And so, what's the answer in that? If there's problems with moving and problems with standing still, if there's problems with both of those realities, doesn't it automatically produce kind of a paralyzing middle ground where you're thinking you need to move but afraid to move as well? We've all felt this. I've felt this. But there's a reason that the Old Testament wanted the place of worship to be a tent. I find that very interesting. Even by the time that Solomon builds it, the temple fully, the Lord isn't all that excited about it. It's because He wants His people to know that life is a journey, not a place. Life is a direction, and is a journey to be enjoyed, to be traversed, in order that we grow and then we live, and we get to experience things we've never experienced before, because life is meant to be a journey, not something we merely endure or hold on to or to protect. Christianity is not a status. It's not merely a set of beliefs. It's actually beliefs that we hold dear in order that we might live it out in learning to love the Lord with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love our neighbors as ourselves. It is not static. It is movement. It's a journey. It's a life. Where does your fear lie today? Are you living life really wishing, you know, if only it could be 30 years ago? That was great then. If only it could be 20 years ago. We used to do this 20 years ago. Why can't we just keep doing what we did 20 years ago? Are you standing still in your faith? You're spending so much time looking back on the road you've traveled that you don't see what's ahead of you or the people around you. And And for others of you, are you looking so far ahead that you haven't even paid attention to right now? Are you thinking that, you know, if only we did this, we'd be happy, and if only I had that, I'd be happy, and if only I could kind of break the shackles of my assumed present waiting, that it would all work out? Have you stopped to look around and see what you might just presently have? That there's much to be content with? I like the idea of a lightweight backpack, but still moving forward on a journey. Told that story before. I get a lot of grief for it because I said it the wrong way. But the story was told of two hikers climbing, what's the tallest peak? Pikes Peak in Colorado. Young 20-something folks climbing the mountain, and they come across a guy much older than them who they assume, this guy's climbing a mountain. We're the mountaineers. We're in our 20s. But these young 20-somethings had their packs filled to the max. I mean, you're talking about packs you need for Mount Everest summit. This is something you can pull off in a day. And you're hauling all the water and the food and the tents and those kind of things, and they come up to this seasoned climber who they assumed, and rightfully so, to be elderly, and all he had was a cane and a little sack full of food, some provisions, and some emergency stuff. And they go, oh, you're climbing this mountain. And he goes, yeah, we're doing it today. And he passes them, goes up. These young men, about 3-4 hours later, looks down the mountain. He's climbing a second time up to them. Second climb of Pikes Peak in a day from the valley floor. And they are in awe and saying, how did you do this? They are properly chastened by assuming the worst. And he looks at these two young men and says, sons, what you think is essential to this journey would just slow me down. And he keeps on going right by. It's just a lot of things we hold on to that we need to let go of. This life is meant to be a journey. It's meant to be enjoyed because we have the Lord with us. And the question is not whether this fork or that fork in the road, but whether we're following Him on whatever road we're on. This decision or that decision both present opportunities to live with integrity and character. This decision or that decision both present opportunities in which we can be tested as to whether or not we trust God or not. And we will make mistakes. They will be of our own choosing at times. They will be painful experiences that we had nothing to do with at all, but they've come our way. But the journey is such that wherever road we're on, the Lord is with us, guiding us and leading us. And we need to be willing enough to set out and move when He moves, and to be patient and to wait when He says be patient and wait. Is that enough? Well, if the Lord is with us, if the Lord is on the side of His people during all their travels, it's enough. Jesus died on the cross so that we might live a life, not hold on to it or protect it or to secure it, but to live it. Let's live it.